Yes, this is UU Todd Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind.
We who labor in the art, we who are singers, we who are actors, we who are artists, we must remember that we come from the people, our strength comes from the people, and we must serve the people and be a part of them.
Yep, this is Utah Phillips here again with Steve, who's doing the engineering on this. Of course, that's the Borsdorfs you were listening to, playing the theme music and the voice of Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson was speaking at an organized meeting of the Theater Guild in London when a lot of people were objecting to organizing a union because they didn't figure out why they needed one. And he was pointing out to them some of the obligations of an artist. We are here at radio station KVMR, Nevada City, California, KVMR, where our motto is, if at first you don't succeed, your skydiving days are over. And we're in our little town of Nevada City up here, little bitty town, a bizarre sort of place, Nevada City, California, small. Our clinic is called Joe's Hospital and Grill. That's how small. Paul Robeson, I've been contemplating doing this for quite a long time. Actually, in doing this, I find that there's no paucity of sources. There's actually an overabundance of sources, and it's hard to decide everything that you want to put in. So we'll do kind of a collage. First, for those of you who don't know about Paul Robeson, a great, a prodigiously great and noble African-American artist, singer, and actor, political activist. Just a little bit of biographical information. Now, Paul Robeson was born April 9th, 1899. That was in Princeton, New Jersey. His father was a runaway slave. His mother was a Quaker abolitionist from a Quaker abolitionist family. Now, in 1915, Paul Robeson won a four-year scholarship to Rutgers University. And while he was there, he won 15 varsity letters for baseball, football, track, and then was named twice to the All-American football team. Phi Beta Kappa Chi in his junior year. And then he graduated the valedictorian of his class. He was the first African-American to study law at Columbia University. And then he joined a law firm. Well, working for that law firm, there was a white secretary who refused to take dictation from him. So he left the law and decided to apply his talents to theater and music. It's a real healthy decision, I think. He sang for peace and justice globally in 15 languages. He's a fine linguist. In 1934, he traveled to Spain to speak to the anti-fascists fighting for the preservation of the Spanish Republic. And that's when he said to those, that great mass of soldiers assembled in front of him, the artist must elect to fight for freedom or slavery. I have made my choice. I had no alternative. Spoke out against racism, Cold War, worked for friendship between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. In the late 40s, he openly questioned why African Americans should fight in the army of a government that tolerated racism. HUAC, the House Un-American Activities Committee, called him a communist. Overnight, 80 concerts were canceled. His career was in shambles. Then in 1950, his passport was revoked. They called him a security risk. Took him 8 years to get it back. Paul Robeson died in 1976 at the age of 77. I had the privilege in Town Hall of New York of singing at that memorial. He wrote his autobiography called Here I Stand. Now that's still in print. You go down to your book, you go down to your independent bookseller and you find that book, all right? Well, let's start out at the beginning of his career. It's barely 3 years after he left the law firm that he recorded this. Now, I have a friend named Joe McHugh. He gave me this record, an old 78, for my birthday. I found it in the bottom of a hand-crank Victrola that he had bought Well, it was a Paul Robeson record, the earliest I have ever heard. 078, recorded June of 1925. Well, people then would have heard it on that hand crank machine, so I took it over to Joe yesterday, and we put it on the Victrola, and we cranked it up and stuffed a mic in the throat of that machine, and you're going to hear it just about exactly the way that they would have heard it back then. Now here, he's singing this duet with Lawrence Brown. Lawrence Brown became Paul Robeson's accompanist globally for the next 26 years. Let's listen to June 1925, Paul Robeson and Lawrence Brown with By and By. Lawrence Brown is accompanist for many, many years, and by, a very, very early recording. When we were kids, well, and neither us or our folks were particularly into the fight game. We were living in Cleveland, Ohio at the time, but we didn't go to boxing matches. Occasionally my father did, my stepfather. But we still had one hero among the fighters, and that was Joe Louis. Joe Louis, the Brown Bomber, and that was not because we understood boxing, but because in my family we understood how important it was for there to be an African-American heavyweight champion of the world. In 1938, Joe Louis fought Max Schmeling. Max Schmeling was the darling of the Nazi Party in Germany. He had knocked out Joe Louis once before. There was a rematch. There was a lot of talk in Germany around the world about the Aryan race and superiority of white people. Joe Louis went into the ring mad. He knocked out Max Schmeling in the first round. I was reading Studs Terkel's book, talking to myself, and just in passing, in one sentence, he mentioned that Richard Wright, the great black novelist who wrote Black Boy and Native Son, had written a song called Joe Louis, and that it had been recorded by Paul Robeson, accompanied by Count Basie. Well, I got Glenn Howard, my record finder, to work on that, and I've never struck out once with Glenn. Now you're going to hear it. Very, very rare recording. Richard Wright's Joe Louis, Paul Robeson and Count Basie.
I'm feeling comfortable and in good shape. My walk here at the training camp has put me in the best of condition.
15 rounds for the world's heavyweight championship. Right and left to the head, a left to the jaw, a right to the head, and Donovan is watching carefully. Lewis measures him, right to the body, a left up to the jaw, and Schmeling is down. The count is 5, 6, 7, 8. The men are in the ring. The fight is over on a technical knockout. Max Schmeling is beaten in one round.
The time, 2:04. The referee stops it. The winner and still champion, Joe Lewis.
Black-eyed peas as cornbread, what makes you so strong? Black-eyed peas as cornbread, what makes you so strong? Cornbread, say I come from where Joe Lewis was born. Lord, I know a secret, swore I'd never tell. Lord, I know a secret, swore I'd never tell. I know what makes old Joe a hook and punch and roll like hell. But he talks all the time. They say Joe don't talk much. He talks all the time. Now you can look at Joe, but you sure can't read his mind. Rabbit, say to the bee, what makes you sting so deep? Rabbit, say to the bee, what makes you sting so deep? Bee, say I sting like Joe and rock 'em all to sleep.
Richard Wright, Robeson, Basie, the song for Joe Lewis. That record has two sides, where the song is continued on side B, but with all of the things that I want to go through, I didn't think that that I'd be able to play both sides of that. Perhaps someday I'll be able to do that. In 1935, there was a thing called the Works Progress Administration. And that's where the Roosevelt administration got people back to work. Yeah, there was the CCC, there was all the public works projects, but also there was a federal writers project gathering state and local archives. There was a federal theater project that created over 5,000 pieces of theater. And there was, in 1935, the WPA commissioned Earl Robinson to as a composer to create a performance which was called at that time the Ballad for Uncle Sam. When that was broadcast, a congressman from Virginia cited it in Congress as an example of communist propaganda. A couple years later, Paul Robeson and John Latouche, who wrote the words, were asked to revise it, where it became the Ballad for Americans. The Ballad for Americans was broadcast 113 times over the radio between 1939 and 1942. It received more mail, more correspondence for those broadcasts than Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. As a matter of fact, this Ballad for Americans was played on the floor to open the Republican National Convention of 1940 and was slated to be recorded by Bing Crosby. But the blacklist hit, the door slammed, the Cold War cranked up, and by 1951-52, you couldn't find this record anywhere. This is a long cantata, but let's listen to the opening of it, Ballad for Americans.
In 76, the sky was red, thunder rumbling overhead. Bad King George couldn't sleep in his bed, and on that stormy morn, old Uncle Sam was born. Old Sam put on a three-cornered hat, and in a Richmond church he sat, and Patrick Henry told him that, while America drew breath, it was liberty or death.
What kind of hat is a three-cornered hat?
Nobody who was anybody believed it. Everybody who was anybody, they doubted it. Nobody had faith. Nobody, nobody but Washington, Tom Paine, Benjamin Franklin, Chaim Solomon, Crispus Attucks, Lafayette. Nobody's.
Nobody's ran a tea party at Boston.
Betsy Ross organized the sewing circle.
Yeah, Paul Revere had a horse race.
And a little ragged group believed it. And some gentlemen and ladies believed it. And some wise men and some fools. And I believed it too. And you know who I am.
So, who are you, mister?
Yeah. How come all this?
Well, I'll tell you. It's like this. You see, now let me...
No, let us tell you!
Then Mr. Tom Jefferson, a mighty fine man, he wrote it down in a mighty fine plan. The rest all sided with a mighty fine man as they crossed their feet and dotted their eyes.
And a mighty fine idea.
Adopted unanimously in Congress, July 4th, 1776.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights.
Among these rights are life.
Yes, sir.
Liberty.
That's right.
And the pursuit of happiness.
Is that what they say?
The very words.
That sure does sound mighty fine.
Well, that's the opening to the Ballad for Americans. Sometime on one of these radio shows, I want to play the whole thing. Sometimes I feel moved to do that because I have some longer pieces that I want to get out there, and I'm just uncertain about whether I ought to do that or not. But I shall probably take the bit in my teeth and do the whole Ballad for Americans in some future show. Well, now, the Henry Wallace campaign, 1948. Henry Wallace had been President Roosevelt's vice president. And he ran on the Progressive Party ticket. That's when all of the forces of the progressive movement, all of the forces of the left in this country came together to create a progressive party as an alternative to, well, you know, what we got today. Paul Robeson was a very large part of that and recorded many songs for that. The vice presidential candidate, by the way, for Henry Wallace, nobody talks about him. His name was Glenn Taylor. Glenn Taylor was from Idaho. Now, Idaho is not known as a particularly liberal state, certainly not these days. But Glenn Taylor, now, when he was campaigning in Idaho for Congress, he would drive up to the edge of a town with a horse trailer behind a truck. And they would park the truck, and he would get the horse out of the horse trailer, a silver-mounted saddle, and he'd climb up on it with the guitar strung over his back. He'd race full bore into town, leap off on the steps of the town hall, unsling his guitar, sing a few songs, make a political speech, get on the horse, and ride hell-bent for leather out of town. Meanwhile, his wife had driven the truck around to the other side of town, where they loaded up the horse, and he got in, and they drove on to the next town. That's some kind of way to campaign, don't you think? Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's listen to the Progressive Party didn't have a lot of money, so they put out their records on cardboard coated with plastic. And you're going to listen to one of those right now, Paul Robeson and the Battle Hymn of 48. Previous show, I talked about people's artists as a large part of the progressive movement. Well, in 1949, the people's artists, Spark Plug Baney by Pete Seeger, Betty Saunders, and Irwin Silber, planned a concert. It was August 27, 1949, at the Lakeland Picnic Grounds in Peekskill, New York, and it featured Paul Robeson. Well, they were attacked by a mob. It was a stronghold up there, the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, the American Legion. They smashed the chairs, burned the song sheets. The concert was canceled. It was rescheduled a week later. Guards from local unions were hired. 20,000 to 25,000 people went to Peekskill to hear Paul Robeson and to prove that they couldn't be intimidated. Well, the police directed the traffic into a little-used road. It turned out to be a trap. And once again, the caravan of cars and buses was viciously attacked. There were many, many people injured, mainly by flying glass. The Peekskill Story, charter records had started up by then. The Peekskill Story, as a sort of cantata, two sides of one record, was recorded by Pete Seeger, by Paul Robeson and by Howard Fast, who, prior to the blacklisting, was the largest selling author in the United States. Let's listen to the Charter Records Peekskill story.
Let me tell you the story of a line that was held, and many men and women whose courage we know well, as they held the line at Peekskill on that long September day. We will hold the line forever till the people have their way.
My name is Howard Fast. I'm here to tell you the story of Peekskill. You see, there were actually two Peekskills, two concerts, two fascist attacks, and I was at both. You won't get the true story from the daily press or the radio, so we're putting it on record for you now. Here are the facts.
You are invited to a summer concert with Paul Robeson, Pete Seeger, Hope Foy, Joan Schlesinger, and George Walker, presented by People's Artists, for the benefit of the Harlem chapter of the Civil Rights Congress, Sunday, August 27th, 1949, at the Lakeland Picnic Grove, Peekskill, New York.
More facts. The Klan elements in Westchester County threatened violence. Police protection was asked. Four deputies showed up to watch 700 so-called veterans attack the early picnickers. These 700 hoodlums closed the only exits, and for 3 hours, they were kept from killing the women and children by a brave group of 39 men and boys, Negro and white. Before the police came, the mob had smashed the rented chairs and burned our music, while they shouted anti-Negro and anti-Semitic epithets and boasted that they would finish Hitler's job.
Hold the line.
My name is Freddie Hellerman of People's Artists. I want to tell you how the entire nation was aroused by the Peekskill outrage. The Westchester Committee for Law and Order invited People's Artists to return to Peekskill and have their concert. Well, we did go back on September 4th. It was Labor Day, and we went back 25,000 strong. While 4,000 trade unionists, most of them real veterans, formed a protective guard, we held our concert with Paul Robeson and Pete Seeger and Hope Foy, Lee Hambro, George Allen, and Joan Schlesinger, and it was a beautiful day, a fine performance, and a victory for all Americans.
Instead of crying, we must keep fighting until we're tired. And oh, man, river, we'll just keep rolling.
And drove up through the gate and saw the gangster police, their faces filled with hate. And then without any warning, the rocks began to come. The cops and troopers laughed to see the damage that was done. They ran us through a gauntlet to their everlasting shame. And the cowards there attacked us, damnation to their name.
That's the sound of fascism. Not in Germany, but here in America. Remember it.
This is Pete Seeger. I was there too. There were 900 police, deputies, and state troopers at Peekskill. They allowed the mob to form along a 4-mile line of road and directed all traffic down this only exit, and then stood by watching while the hoodlums threw rocks through the windows of cars and buses. Heads were bashed in, eyes were cut by flying glass. Cars were overturned and the people in them dragged out and beaten. And the police stood by and laughed. Hoodlum gangs went on a night-long reign of terror, all through Westchester County, clear down to 210th Street and Broadway. Then the police moved. They moved into the picnic grounds to beat up the trade union guards.
Over 160 wounded were reported at hospitals. One trade unionist, for example, had his nose pulverized, his skull fractured, and lost the sight of one eye permanently. Protests have been pouring into Dewey from all over the country. District Attorney Finelli reported to Governor Dewey.
Police should be commended for their excellent work.
And Governor Dewey said to Mr. Finelli,
the police did an excellent job. The communists provoked this. You investigate the riot, Mr. Finelli.
But at a great mass meeting to protest Peekskill, Paul Robeson gave our answer.
These Klan-inspired and police-condoned hoodlums cannot stop the song of freedom in America. We are going on singing and presenting our concerts in every corner of America. Let's fight together.
All across the nation we are telling you this tale. You can marvel at the concert and know we have not failed. We shed our blood at Peekskill and suffered many a pain. But we beat back the fascists and we'll beat them back again. Hold the line, hold the line.
Peekskill. I forgot to mention that earlier, that in that caravan of buses bringing people up from New York City and surrounding areas, there was one fellow in there had an old wire recorder, the battery powered. He stuck the microphone out the window, and the crowd noises you heard on that recording were not theater. They weren't made up. They were the actual sounds that that were heard at Peekskill. Well, Othello Records. Now, Paul Robeson had been blacklisted. His concerts have been canceled. Some African-American producers got together in Harlem, and specifically for the purpose of getting Paul Robeson's voice out, created a label called Othello Records. Of course, Othello was Paul Robeson's great role during the 1940s on Broadway, and before that in London. The first black person anywhere in the world to play the Moor, who was after all black. Othello Records issued this a record which I borrowed from Aaron Brody. Boy, I've got to get that back to him. It was a limited edition record from Othello, autographed by Paul Robeson. We're going to listen to the Song of Four Rivers. Paul Robeson was a great advocate for world peace, and the Song of the Four Rivers is about the flowing together of four rivers, the Thames, the Yangtze, the Don, and the Mississippi. Paul Robeson, The Ballad of Four Rivers.
Story of the four rivers that the eyes of the world are on. They're called the Thames, the Mississippi, and the Yangtze, and the Don. the rivers roll to the sea. River rolling down to the open sea. Here's the story of the four sailors that the eyes of the world are on. Their names are John and Mao and Tommy, and the fourth is named Yvonne.
Oh, the four
they raise them separately. But they discovered how to get together when they all sailed down to the sea. River rolling down to the open sea. Now the people of the four rivers must be friends as time rolls on. Beside the Thames, the Mississippi, and the Yangtze, and the Don.
Four Rivers, Othello Records. And thank you, Aaron Brody, for the extended loan of some of the records that you're listening to right now. Well, now, it was June 14th, 1949. Paul Robeson was in Moscow. He had been there a number of times singing. When he arrived in Moscow at his hotel, he asked to see his Soviet Jewish friends, Solomon Mikhols, a great name in theater, and Itzhak Pfeffer, a poet. He was told by the authorities that Mikhols had died and that Pfeffer was on vacation. Robeson wouldn't leave his hotel room until they brought Pfeffer to him. He insisted on seeing Pfeffer. Well, of course, the authorities went to Lubyanka, a grim prison, and took Pfeffer out. Took him to the hotel, where he sat with Paul Robeson. Right off, Pfeffer, through sign language, indicated that the room was bugged. So they passed notes back and forth and then talked aloud just of average sorts of things. But through scrawling notes on pieces of paper and passing them back and forth, Robeson was told that Mikhols was dead, was murdered on Stalin's orders. And then Pfeffer drew a finger across his throat, indicating that he was going to be killed next. Well, it was in Tchaikovsky Hall that night. At the end of the concert, the last piece, Paul Robeson dedicated his song, a song to his friend Solomon Mikhols, that made the crowd gasp. Nobody expected to hear that name spoken again. He talked of meeting Pfeffer. There were more gasps, because now they realized that he was still alive. He announced that he would celebrate the deep ties between the Jewish communities of the United States and the Soviet Union. He sang a song he had just learned passing through Poland. It was the song of the Warsaw Ghetto Rebellion. And he sang it in Yiddish. At the end, there was a stunned silence, and then the applause began.
Песня еврейского гетто. Оккупированной немцами Варшавы.
Огненный кейн
all us to geist im letzten Weg, wenn Himmeln bleien, verstellen bläue Teg, weil kommen wird noch unser Reus gebinkte Schau, uns wird der Beugte und unser Trott mir sein in Do, weil kommen wird noch unser Reus gebinkte Schau, uns wird der Beugte und unser Trott mir sein in Do. Palmenland bis Weidenland von Schnee. Wir seien in da mit unser Pein, mit unser Weh. Und wenn gefallen, süßer Spritz von unser Blut, wird noch ersprotzt von unser Geburt, unser Mut. Und wenn gefallen, süßer Spritz von unser Blut, wird noch ersprotzt von unser Geburt, unser Mut. Geschrieben ist das Lied mit Bluten, nicht mit Blei. Es ist nicht ein Lied von Summervögel auf der Frei. Nos hat der Volk zwischen Fallen die gewendet. Das Lied gesungen mit Naganes in die Hand. Nos hat der Volk zwischen Fallen die gewendet. Das Lied gesungen mit Naganes in die Hand.
And the applause went on and on and on, people weeping, throwing themselves upon each other, until finally the censors had to cut it off. It was February 2nd, 1952. Well, let me say, I belong to the Mine Mill and Smelter Workers Union, Local 598 in Sudbury, Ontario, the last organized unit of that union. 2,000 miners up there in northern Ontario, of course, the mine, mill, and smelter workers were red-baited out of existence, largely by the Steel Workers Union with the collusion of the U.S. government. Well, I went up there to sing at the 100th anniversary of the Western Federation of Miners, and I walked into the Union Hall, you know, it was called the Joe Hill Memorial Auditorium, and before I went on stage, I was told this is that stage, that very stage, was the first stage Paul Robeson sang on when he finally got his passport back. Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers Union, it was in February 1952, they invited him to their convention in Vancouver, British Columbia. When he got to the Canadian border, and mind you, don't need a passport to get into Canada, he was stopped by a special order from the president and from the FBI, threatening with 5 years imprisonment if he went into Canada at the Mine Mill Convention. Well, the Electrical Workers Union did a bootleg hookup to the convention hall, Mine Mill and Smelter Workers Convention Hall, and Robeson did the concert over the phone. Now, they did it over again May 18th, 1952. There, Paul Robeson stood on a flatbed, pulled up 1 foot away from the border, and he sang to 40,000 Canadians and Americans. Well, let's hear his opening remarks, and then after that, let's listen to his hymn to the nations.
I want to thank you for being here today. I want to thank Harvey Murphy and the mine, mill, and smelter workers. I can't tell you how moved I am at this moment. It seems that nothing can keep me from my beloved friends in Canada. I stand here today under great stress because I dare, as do you, all of you, to fight for peace and a decent life for all men, women, and children, wherever they may be. And especially today, I stand fighting for the rights of my people in this America in which I was born. You have known me through many years. I am the same Paul, fighting a little harder because the times call for harder struggles. This historic occasion today probably means that I shall be able to sing again as I want to sing freely without being stopped here and there. What is being done at this Peace Arch today will ring out, is already ringing out around the world. I thank you deeply.
country's anthem. Shout your land's undying fame. Light the wondrous tale of nations with your people's golden name. Tell your father's noble story. Raise on high your country's sign. Join then in the final glory. Brother, lift your flag with mine. Hail the sun of peace new rising. Hold the war clouds close averred. Blend our banners, oh my brothers, in the rainbow of the world. Red as blood and blue as heaven, wise as age and proud as youth. Melt our colors, wonder woven, in the one great light of truth. Build the road of peace before us, build it wide and deep and long. Speed the slow and check the eager, help the weak and curb the strong. None shall push aside another, none shall let another fall. March beside me, oh my brothers, all for one and one.
Well, the great Peace Arch concert, those tapes were lost in the mine mill and the filing cabinet. Ray Stevens up there in Sudbury, Ontario, recently rediscovered and finally issued as a recording. That was Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, by the way. Well, it's hard to figure out. I've wrestled with this. As I say, there's so much about Paul Robeson that it moves me very, very deeply. How do you end a program like this? Well, I thought about it and thought about it and listened to everything I have. According to Paul Robeson's son, his greatest artistic achievement was the 1943-1944 Broadway production of Othello. So, yes, let's listen to Othello's last speech, Paul Robeson.
This is the last speech of Othello that he makes, and they've come to take him away to Venice. He speaks as one conscious of his own dignity, of his own heritage, a culture as rich as that of ancient Venice, and he feels that he has committed his error for his human dignity and not from any wild, savage passion. And so he speaks, "Soft you! A word or two before you go. I have done the state some service, and they know it. No more of that. I pray you in your letters, when you shall these unlucky deeds relate, speak of me as I am. Nothing extenuate, nor set down aught in malice. Then must you speak of one that loved full wisely but too well, of one not easily jealous but being wrought, perplexed in the extreme, one whose hand, like the base Indian, threw a pearl away richer than all his tribe.
subdued eyes, albeit unused to the melting mood, drop tears as fast as the Arabian trees. Their medicinable cup. Set you down this, and say besides that in Aleppo once, where a malignant and a turbaned Turk beat a Venetian, introduced the state, I took by the throat the damned heathen dog and smote him thus. I kissed thee ere I killed thee. No way but this, killing myself to die upon a kiss.
Being with you for this hour. My name is Utah Phillips, and this has been Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. Special thanks to Aaron Brody, a member of the Old Progressive Party who loaned me a number of the records I've used today. Joe McHugh, who gave me that very early recording of Paul Robeson, and then Glenn Howard, a record finder who is... I've never struck out with Glenn Howard, and we'll see you again next week. Remember, Tapper Light. Paul Robeson ends his autobiography, Here I Stand, with a poem from Pablo Neruda. Let us think of the entire earth and pound the table with love. I don't want blood again to saturate bread, beans, music. I wish they would come with me, the miner, the little girl, the lawyer, the seaman, the doll maker, to go into a movie and come out to drink the reddest wine. I came here to sing, and for you to sing with me.